Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Hello and welcome to My Dad Wrote a Porno, The Footnotes. Now, we've got a very, very special guest this week. I've known her my entire life, and I think that she can give us insights on Rocky that maybe even I can't. Her dad wrote a porno too. It's my sister Alexa.
Hello. Yes.
Lex.
Here she is.
Lex in the house.
Hey. Could we call you Ms. Flintstone? Is that how you'd like to be addressed?
Yeah, well, you know, anything goes these days.
Well, I have loads of questions about Rocky, but I have loads of questions about Jamie too.
Oh, that's good.
So maybe you know, the elephant in the room is, of course, Val Harris.
She's no elephant, my friend.
Is she a dainty lady?
Yeah, Jamie's past in the theatre. So Jamie told us a few weeks ago that basically throughout his childhood, he used to spend his Saturday nights.
Not nights.
Backstage.
Days.
No, you said nights.
I did.
You said that's how you like to spend your evenings. Backstage at the Altrincham, what was it called?
It is the Club Theatre. It's now the Little Theatre.
Just hanging out with people, writing plays.
She was one of the people that I hung out with.
You did it too.
Mm-hmm. We wrote a panto once, an entire panto, Jamie and I, cast the whole thing from our friends around where we lived, had auditions in the cellar. We did.
A panto.
It was a panto.
Sorry, auditions in the cellar, anybody?
Also, your friends in the nearby regions. How old were the friends? Because Jamie painted a picture of the friends being 50, 60, 70 plus.
No, between the ages of, I don't know, 10 and 15.
Was she saying 15 or 50?
1-5.
There were the people in the Club Theatre, people like Mike and John and Vicky Lane and people.
Oh, those people.
Yeah, but they weren't our friends. These two were obsessed with the fact that they were our friends. They weren't our friends.
They were our mentors.
Yeah.
What 8-year-old has a mentor?
Sorry, can I just quickly go back to the auditions in the cellar? Mm-hmm. So you wrote a panto, you auditioned children.
A play.
You
invited children. It was a very serious play.
Cool, fine. But you invited children into your cellar.
Our friends, not children. We were
you
old.
Were children.
Yeah, we were also children. We were 15 or so.
You were 15?
Okay, 12.
We were like 10.
We were 8 or 15 or 20 or so.
That sounds very dodgy. You were 15 inviting children into the cellar. I don't think so.
This was after we'd won the award for the best play, which was the comedy.
Yes, Pick and Mix.
Pick and Mix.
Why have all my Christmases come early?
No, Pick and Mix was a great one-act play. It actually won the one-act play
Hale One Act Festival Award.
The top seller plays of the year.
And it was very highly influenced by Victoria Wood's Dinner Ladies.
It was a character piece.
What was it about?
Dinner Ladies.
Literally, it was about two cleaners at W.H. Smith's.
Was it Woolworths?
Which is a very...
very upmarket shop.
Yeah, it's a stationery shop, right?
Pick and Mix.
And they were famous for their pick and... Yeah, it was Woolworths, because they were famous for their pick and mix stall. Do you remember
internationally,
that?
I don't know, is that what it's called, where you get to choose your own sweets?
Yes, exactly. A little buffet of sweets that you have to pay for individually and via...
Wait.
Yeah. And so we played the two cleaners. We were Horace and...
Madge,
okay. And it was basically about us and the people who worked in the shop and their kind of daily trials, tribulations. It was very kind of Ken Loach, Mike Lee.
Yeah, sounds it, yeah.
Sheila Delaney, kitchen yeah. sink drama. Yes. Lovely.
Sorry, the auditions in the cellar.
Oh my God, he's obsessed with the cellar.
No, just quickly though. So you'd audition them and then you'd give them parts and then yeah. did that go on to be a production?
We did used to like put on, you know, little skits and plays for Mum and Dad, but I guess you guys did that as well. You definitely did. We've talked about this before with
oh, yeah.
your brother.
Well, we had a rudimentary keyboard. I mean, you're going to use that to your advantage, aren't you? That demo button's not going to play itself.
No, lovely.
And James, you used to perform, didn't you?
I had a Paul Daniels magic set. Ooh. And I used to like learn the tricks from that, and then I'd gather the family around and perform the tricks. One was where lots of small sponges became a big sponge.
Many sponge.
Honestly, my family were dazzled.
You don't see much sponge work these days.
You don't. It is a lost art.
For good
art.
Reason, I would argue. But yeah.
Darren Brown's put it aside, hasn't he, and the like.
More fool him.
David Blaine, like, I could get in a giant glass cube, or I could make a massive sponge out of tiny sponges.
But anyway, we're not talking about me. We're talking about Dad and how Dad's newfound career has kind of impacted the Flintstone family, right?
Well, okay, so let's take it back a bit. So what was your reaction, Alexa, when you first heard about your dad? When did you first hear about it for a start, and how did you react? Was it a surprise?
Oh, huge surprise. And quite frankly, I was really annoyed because I'm the firstborn here. Was yeah. I sent the manuscript?
So it's your inheritance,
yeah.
really?
No. Yeah, sure. Who was sent the manuscript? The boy. Yes. The Mortons pride themselves on not being remotely a sexist family, and quite frankly, I beg to differ.
Oh.
As do the books, a little. Just a touch.
So why do you think he sent it to Jamie over you?
I think it was some sort of weird honorary filial, you know, demonstration of love.
I don't think he would have thought that you would understand.
But were you surprised? Because we've met your dad before, like, this all started. Were you really surprised? Like, you know what he's like.
I was not surprised when I found out how hilarious it was and how brilliantly sort of naive. It has the stamp of Dad, as you talk about so much, all those little details when we drink to the, you know, furniture and, you know, items like that. It's very Dad, but it's also, I think it's a bit glorious. I think it's pretty wonderful to do that at that time in your life. I mean, why shouldn't everyone do that?
Well, I mean, you know, like in various forms, whatever the medium is that they choose. I mean, not everybody needs to choose pornography.
Yeah. No.
And dare
no.
we call it pornography at this stage? I don't know.
I mean, he could have written Pick and Mix too, but no, he decided on Belinda Blink.
It's been done. He's nothing but an original.
That's
very
true.
Very true. When you think back to your childhood with Jamie and the others and the other gals, what's the like biggest rocky moment that you can think of where he's been a wind-up merchant? I mean, I know they were constant, right?
Yeah, oh my God.
I mean, so many. You say that and I'm bamboozled with options.
So this is just part of a campaign of trying to...
Screw his kids.
Yeah. I mean, I remember being teenagers once and I was allowed to have sort of mini, not quite a house party, but a group of people around, and we were all very drunk, and it must have been about 2 or 3 in the morning, and Mum and Dad were out and they came back and we were in like... You know, we were allowed in the nice sitting room, so I was obviously trusted friends.
Jealous.
You know, group of gals and guys, you know, having a really nice time. We were all quite pissed. Mum and Dad came in, obviously Dad absolutely blasted, completely off his tits, and he comes in and he goes, "Everyone, I'm Uri Geller." And he pulled a spoon out of his pocket and started to try and bend the spoon to impress my teenage friends. And I just remember thinking, do I go mortified? Or all my friends were killing themselves laughing, going, he's an absolute legend. And that's when I think I just realised, he's wonderful. And I just laughed my head off. And ever since then, they were like, how's Uri?
You've got to embrace it. That's the thing about Rocky. Like, don't push against it. Just let it come into your life.
Let that spoon not bend, because it won't.
Family holidays as well. Jamie's always told us about how he used to burn CDs with just 20 repetitions of the same song on it.
Oh, yes.
What else would happen on holiday with your dad when he was like...
One of my favourite stories is when we had a caravan attached to the car. So you've got 4 children and obviously our wonderful mum, Wilma, in the front. And the caravan's attached and it's all fine, apart from Dad decides that he wants to take the scenic route. Uh-oh. Hmm? We're going up this limestone hill, basically, in rural France with a caravan.
God, yeah, remember you remember this. Oh, no.
And Mum was like, I don't think this is sensible because the water's been high. We had to go over some kind of little ford thing.
It was like midnight.
And it was midnight. And there were lots of children. I think I was about 16 or so. So everyone's younger than me. So this is a troop of youngsters. It's late at night.
Are you in the car or the caravan as the kids?
We're all in the car. No,
they would never dare put us in the caravan with the vehicle moving, Alice.
Is that not allowed?
It's with
not
Dad legal. Driving?
No.
You shouldn't really even be in the car.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, exactly. The car, you take your life into your own.
We'd be safer in the roof rack, to be honest. Anyway, so we're going up this stupid limestone hill, essentially. And because we've been through the ford before, the caravan comes disattached, right? So the caravan disattaches itself. It's been clunked too much. Brakes on! We all have to run up. We've all got flip-flops on. It's the summer in France. It's been raining. It's all slippery. We had to try and push a caravan up a limestone hill.
Wait, how old are you? How old is this band of mechanics?
16 I am, and then everyone's down from that.
Yeah,
so
everyone's
what, 3 years
minus
each
three.
Way.
Yeah.
So what's the youngest, like 8?
7.
Little 7-year-old.
I think actually, no, I have to
she
say.
She was no use.
They were put to the side. They were put on the verge. The little ones, the little girls. Sorry, they'll hate that. But they were put to the side because that was dangerous. It was fine for us to risk our lives, but not the little girls.
Just
we'll
imagining like little B, like, oh, so tired, been asleep in the car. And I was like, no, get your gloves on. You're pushing the caravan.
You want any sleep tonight? You're pushing that caravan up a limestone hill.
But can I just say, we did push it up the hill and we continued on our journey for the next 4 hours.
We did.
So it was not in vain.
I mean, that's why the Flintstones had so many children, because if you get into those predicaments, you're gonna need
a
some kids.
No, absolutely.
But it's literally the Flintstones as well, you know, when they had their feet in the car.
It is.
Maybe that's where it came from. Maybe that was the inspo.
What an image.
No, yeah, that was a particularly horrible one.
Do you listen to the podcast?
Oh, absolutely.
You've heard it all.
Yeah, I love it.
So what do the wider family, as the representative for the family right now, sorry Jamie,
the mouthpiece,
what does everyone think?
So proud.
And that's why we're batshit.
That's why we're mental. I know it's mad to say that, but honestly, I feel so proud. So proud of my dad for just being such a mentalist to sit down and do it in the first place. And so proud of Jamie and, you know, always been such a wonderful brother of mine and so proud of all his achievements, not to sound all blah, but it's true.
What are you reading? You're reading this.
What's he giving you?
I mean, what I would say as well is I have to say it's a huge testament to my mum, because my dad wouldn't be my dad, wouldn't be allowed to be my dad without my mum's support and her amazingness.
We've got to talk Wilma.
She's just so great.
There were moments, though, at the beginning, right, where she was like, I don't think so. Not happening.
Oh, no, she doesn't listen.
No,
no offence to Jamie.
No, she doesn't
like, Jamie,
listen.
No, she doesn't. I mean, she doesn't want to ruin her marriage.
She listened to Emma Thompson.
Yes. Some of the Michael
Lynn.
Sheen she likes. She won't listen to this.
No, she won't.
Say what you want.
You don't have an Oscar.
Sorry, darling. I mean, no. Yeah, but so she'll listen to some footnotes, but she doesn't listen to the content because that's not what it's about for her. She's very proud of Dad. She's so proud of Jamie, you know. And
what does she think we do?
Yeah, it helps.
She's
not
like, they've
listen.
Got that lovely poetry show that they do. Yeah.
She calls it Jamie's show.
No, she does not.
She does. She said to my friend, because my friend was like, are you going on any holidays? And Mum said, oh, we're just going to be seeing a bit of Jamie's show.
That's very euphemistic. That's like when my aunt says, oh, James has got a special friend.
Yes.
Yeah, exactly.
Yes.
And what's their relationship like? Like, because she kind of...
James, that's none of your goddamn business.
Thank you, Anna.
But she kind of manages him, doesn't she? She's almost become Rocky Flintstone's manager at this point.
poor woman. I mean, you can all empathise around this table. Well, the thing with Mum and Dad is they are an extraordinary partnership, and that's what they are. No one really manages anybody. They are a partnership, they are a duo, and there are moments when it might appear that one person is kind of cooperating a little bit about that because they wanted to do something else, but essentially it is a partnership and there's no managing. I mean, you've met Rocky. There's not really any managing of the man.
So if you have listened to a lot, just going back to before, is there anything that you've noticed from real life? Is there stuff you're like, oh my God, that's from that?
Certainly his travel around the world, certainly his fascination. My dad is such a people person. He can talk to, as Jamie mentioned, he can get on with anyone in any language. He's extraordinary. He has this wonderful bonhomie. He just oozes it and everyone's just like, ah, he's great. And I've been to Brazil with them because I used to work out there. And honestly, it is a hoot. Anything you imagine is nowhere near as funny as the actual situation that you get. Brilliant story. So he needed to get some kind of rat trap or rat poison or something.
I can't wait to come stay.
Yeah. For a friend. And he did this whole charade. He was doing that. He pushed his lips up, was doing the teeth, was doing the claws at the face. Finally, Mike was scuttling along with his fingers along the counter to try and get this product. And then the word is ratos.
Of course it is.
And that was the word. Same thing happened when he acted out diarrhea in the pharmacy.
Oh my God.
The word is Giahia. It's literally like, and then I was like, yeah, yeah, here, doing all the pointing. Never lasted so much in my life. Vomito was the same. Spent all the time acting being sick. Repeat to fate. The word was vomito. I mean, you can't make it up, as you said. You can't make it up.
I feel like if he got rid of the ratos, he might not have the diarrhea and the vomito.
Are there any bits in the book which have particularly made you uncomfortable as offspring of Rocky Flintstone?
Occasionally, yes. I mean,
Surely the sexy stuff.
Yeah, some of the anatomical details, perhaps. Yeah, some of the sexy stuff, especially when it's just a bit gross, as we all know. But also that, I find that more hilarious. But I'm also a bit like, oh, bless you, you're nearly there. You're just
often so close.
So close. You know, he's in the right area, geographically sometimes. And he's got the sort of, he's trying for the mood, he's trying for the sort of moment, but he doesn't. And also, can I just say, I think her tits hung like pomegranates is a bloody great simile.
Do you know what, actually, since the early days, yeah, loads of people have pointed out that it's in other texts, like it's a thing.
How pert they are, the juiciness of fruit, thinking about Adam and Eve and the apple, the forbidden. Like, I just think there's so much.
Oh, but that's not what he was thinking. Come on, this is revisionist history. Like, it's not what he was thinking about when he bloody wrote it drunk on sangria. Come on.
No, he's got a lot of Bible knowledge, Dad. I'm telling you, it's subconscious, true. But it's there.
Sorry, I think he could go back to it a little bit. Some of this is not Bible worthy. Some of this would be, I would say, frowned upon, Alexa. Yeah. I really
he won
would.
Competitions for reciting the scriptures.
Did
at
he?
School. Oh, yeah, he was dead good.
Him and his brother.
They took all the prizes.
And knew every
all the
gospel
kids.
By heart.
Are you serious? Could he still do it to this day?
No, he's lost the faith, hasn't he?
A bit.
I think the faith might have lost him.
Yes, more to the point.
Also, I can imagine your dad remixing them and being like, as long as it's ballpark, you don't need, like, it's just, you know, roughly the same
Stations
words.
Of the Cross. Oh, at some point he did this, yeah, whatever. Simon of Cyrene, who, somebody, yeah.
Tell us more about Brazil, because you mentioned it's a wild time. Do they party a lot over there? And
oh, like, they're so much fun. I mean, honestly, sometimes keeping up is quite hard. I'm a good few years younger than my mum and dad, obviously, because they're my parents. But I do have to sometimes gird my loins and go, come on, Lex, you're cracking on.
Do they go to carnival?
Yes, I've been... Dad's drowned in the parade. One time I lost them at a carnival in the northeast near Recife, around there. I was a bit worried about losing my parents, and I'm sure they didn't even notice I was gone. So that was great. Yeah. They're just having a wonderful... And I found them dancing to Dire Straits. Just flinging themselves around in this incredible sky, spangled with stars, with all these, everyone just dancing and laughing and just wonderful.
They are party people, aren't they?
They are. They really are.
Does Rocky talk about the books and the podcast quite a lot these days, or is he good at keeping them separate?
He's much better at keeping them separate, actually. I remember once Jamie saying, Dad, it's Christmas. You are Dad, not Rocky. Yeah. And he was like, okay, doing that mocking and pretending to listen to you face. But he did actually listen, bless him. And
yeah, he did.
Because I think he can get so excited about things. And that's that whole point about his effervescence and his enthusiasm for life, which our family do, I would like to say, you know, have as a whole. But that's part of it. And he's not doing it to be irritating or to be arrogant necessarily. He's doing it because he's so
excited about it all.
It is exciting.
You know, this show's done, you know, crazy things for him.
It has. And he's so proud of all of you. And he loves it. You know, the first time he played me an episode of the podcast, I was in Spain with mum and dad, and he went, Lecter, just listen to her. They've just made it magnificent.
Oh.
He was so proud. When you were ripping the piss out of him, you were rinsing him for everything it was worth. He was in hysterics.
Watching him listen to it is brilliant.
Yeah.
Like, when I got back and played the Lynn episode, he was literally bouncing off the walls. He was so excited. I mean, he was writing more songs, but...
I've never seen him listen to an episode.
Oh, you should. Yeah. It's absolutely adorable.
Because that's the thing we get asked most, like, how does he take it? Because obviously we do occasionally criticise him.
Every now and then.
And people are always like, is he not upset? But he's just... The phrase I always use is impervious to offence. Like, he's just somebody who...
But he loves it.
Yeah, he loves
it. And he really thinks it's funny, like, because he can see his own flaws. He's not stupid. Like, he's literally like, that's fucking true.
She's got me there.
Yeah, exactly.
Because also, he never wrote these thinking that he was a great writer. You know, it isn't like he's, you know, been struggling for 60 years to become this great writer. He's now got the time to do it. Like, this was just a bit of fun in the garden shed, literally.
If we were to get him a token of our appreciation and affection, what do you think is the perfect gift for Rocky Flintstone?
Ooh, that's a good question.
Because he's quite tough to buy for.
Yeah. But he's also very sweet. You could literally get him a chocolate orange.
Oh, he'd love
lovely,
that.
Thank you.
Oh,
yeah. Yeah, honestly. I mean, that's default every Christmas for me, but... Would when you bought him the poster and you'd all signed it, and he absolutely loved that. That was... I mean, he's never going to cry. But if he could ever be brought to tears emotionally for Rocky. He loved that.
Yeah, we did get him a poster of the, was that the Royal Albert Hall?
Yeah. Loved. So proud. Because it's a team, you know. And as much as, obviously, he is very much Rocky, he knows he's part of a team. He loves being part of the team. He's so proud of all of you, as well as, obviously, so amazingly surprised and loving the fact that his work has found this spotlight. But he's so proud of what you guys have done. So he would, yeah, something like that he'd love.
Well, we feel like we've joined the Flintstone family business. We're sort of adoptees, aren't we?
You're just like two more of his children, really.
I would push that caravan any day of the week.
True love.
It's been so nice to have you on, because it's just given us a bit of like a different perspective on what we might normally... Like, you've made him sound like a more... Because we hear like the silly stories and, you know, like Alistair's, we're always like critiquing what he does. But it's nice to just hear about him as a more rounded human being.
Alexa, I feel like to top it off, you should say the thing that really only you and Jamie and the girls can say...
My dad wrote a porn.
Yes, he did.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi. This is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary, not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.